92.3 WTTS. On demand.
92.3 WTTS, I'm Craig Shank with Sebastian Kruger of Inlets, on tour now in support of InterArbiter. Could you tell us about your experiences with music growing up?
Yeah, they were immersive, but I wouldn't call them very formalized or strict. I mean, I was pretty bad at practicing things at home like I was supposed to, but I was involved in a choir in my hometown, and I took piano lessons since I was like five. I took up the clarinet as a result of requirements in middle school, and then the guitar at 14 was what I wanted to do because I thought that would be cooler than clarinet. But then all of those things ended up serving me a lot later when I wanted to create my own sounds. But I wouldn't say that I really excelled at any one thing. I think I'm more of an ideas person than a virtuoso.
You said you got your first guitar at the age of 14. How did you get it? Was it a gift or did you buy it yourself?
I just inherited my brother's old crappy Hammer guitar. I think there was like these terrible 80s, what was it called? Like a Floyd Rose bridge or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's like a whammy bar in there. It was just awful. I think I can like remember the way it felt now. It just feels like a terrible guitar to play. And I think I bought like a used crappy Crate amplifier and started trying to learn like funk chords, which meant like one finger barring across the neck. So,
and you said that guitar is obviously your primary instrument now, and that some of the instruments you tried were more experiments than anything. And are there any instruments that were really just temporary diversions that you picked up once and never played again?
Oh no, nothing is temporary. All that stuff will come back. Even if that's true now, I'm sure that it'll come into the mix later. But I suppose I got the most serious about the guitar. I decided that I was going to move to New York and try to play jazz, except I was really bad at it. I've never been very good at being too scholarly with instruments, but I think that really helped me because once you learn the mechanics of the guitar, you can sort of apply that to, you know, like the banjo, which I don't really know. Like, I know the guitar, but competent enough to write my own songs on it, things like that. So, but the guitar is probably the thing I got the most nerdy about.
You actually played banjo for Feist on Saturday Night Live, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, could you tell us about your experience working with Feist, My Brightest Diamond, DM Stith, and other people's work, and how those collaborations prepared you for your own album?
Yeah, I mean, I think those things were really organic. It's just something that once you befriend someone who's doing really interesting things and they could take an interest in you, you just meet other people, and then that those tree branches can grow out endlessly. Again, I'm not a virtuoso. I think it has a lot to do with spirit and just compatibility with people. I mean, I think I learned a lot from collaborating with other people in deciding what I did or didn't like about how they and that's not a criticism of them, but just how they did their own projects, and I could sort of think a little bit about myself. And I mean, it's also really stark sometimes when you realize your limitations, because like Shara Warden from My Brightest Diamond is this incredible singer, so, and she does a lot of things musically that I just couldn't get away with doing for that reason. And I think you know, the more you play music, the more you start to see those kinds of things. And just also as a side person, I sort of I never was a side person intentionally. It was just mostly out of interest in helping my friends and playing their music and liking their music and things like that. But in doing that, you really start to learn what you might need from people if they're going to be in your project and how they might need things from you. So the communication helps a lot. And also it's just really inspiring. I mean, these are really great musicians, like, you know, DM Stith and Shara and Feist, and I don't know, everybody in Brooklyn is pretty talented. It's kind of intimidating.
We've been talking about you collaborating with other musicians and helping them out in live performances and on their albums, but who are some of the people that helped you when it came time to record this album, InterArbiter?
The core people in my group, my drummer Michael Resnick and my bass player Nate Lithgow. Nate plays in My Brightest Diamond. He's Shara's bass player, and Michael and Nate are in a band called Arpline in New York. So everybody has their own projects, but those are my core folks. And then my friend Angel from the band Dirty Projectors came and sang with us, and I've known her for a long time, and she actually played with us for a while before she even started playing in Dirty Projectors. And then Zach Condon from Beirut play some brass on the record. Those things also were just really organic. I mean, these are my friends whose talents I wanted to utilize, and all that stuff felt really natural just because I mean, we're all musicians and friends, and it's great. I mean, I think that they added a lot to the record, even if they might not think so.
I'm with Sebastian Kruger of Inlets, and in 2006 you released the Vestibule EP online, and following this it took you about 3 years until Inner Arbiter was finished. So what was the writing and recording process like for the debut album?
I can barely remember it. It was such a snail's pace. I think I really got too much in my own head trying to create something that I thought was going to be bigger and better and more learned or whatever that means, you know, just having taken something away from the experience of having ears on the last record. And that's just not something that's really conducive to being productive or creative. And, you know, daily life stuff got in the way. It just ended up taking a long time. I sat with stuff for a long time. And so strangely enough, I think one of the themes in the record is a lot about letting go of one's rules or judgments, and just trying to create, because I think that ended up being more important to me than deciding whether it was, I thought it was as good as it should be, or whether other people will. It was more important to just keep going. I was tired of not going with my own music after a while.
What part of the album took you the longest? Was there any song or particular melody that you just couldn't get down?
No. I mean, I would track these things in discrete moments. I would just build layers. And, you know, I almost wish that sometimes my vision of things were more holistic and complete, that I could see a whole song when I sat down, and that my problem was really just enacting it or something. But it's sort of not. It's just, it's like I write the song and record it as I go. So sometimes figuring out if it's winding the right way, or it can be really daunting. Actually, you know what? I do have an easier answer for you. It's probably the poppiest song on the record, which is called In Which I, Robert. It's sort of an outlier for me, I think, on the record. And so it was really tough for me to figure out where that song would end up going, even in the course of that one song. It's such a different sound from the rest of the record, I think. But that's just me. I think a lot of other people think it sounds like the rest of the record on pop music or something.
Yeah, and it's also the only track I've ever heard that effectively uses the word underbelly.
Underbelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not totally sure where that popped into the head, but I'm proud. Proud of that, if nothing else.
Yeah, you should be. And the album itself, you worked on it mostly in your apartment, is that true?
Yeah.
What are the benefits and downsides of working in an apartment, the area that you live in?
Oh, I think now I'm just sick of it. I'm turning into a crazy person yelling at dogs out my window, and the kid below me who wants to play Fleetwood Mac really loudly all the time, or whatever that is. And but it's also just really convenient because I don't have to commit to going somewhere else for an extended period of time and placing all these pressures on getting something produced in this one session or something like that. So for me, that was a nice part about the way that the record went. I think it was because of the fact that I was sort of dribbling it out in little bits, having the ability to just go over to the computer and work a little bit and leave it. That ended up, you know, working for that sort of writing style. But I am looking forward to trying to do it in a more official way, I suppose. But maybe I'll find that that's terrible. I don't know. I mean, I know I have a lot of friends who prefer to do it themselves. And I understand that. It's better when you can touch something and manipulate all the minutiae of what you're doing. And, I mix the record myself. And even if it sounds amateurish, to me it sounds like as close as I was going to get it with my fingers. And there's something nutritious about that, maybe.
Yeah, it's good for the soul, yeah. I guess. And you've talked about how you basically had your hands on every part of this project from the inception to the final product. But when you take it into the live setting, you have to rely on other people to help you convey your message. Mm-hmm. So how do you convey to your musicians exactly what you're looking for in the performances of your material?
I think sometimes it involves me feeling like a jerk because it's a lot of bossiness. I think that the people that I am playing with, and it ends up being a rotating cast of friends and whoever is available when we have stuff coming up, I think they all have really good instincts, and so sometimes they suggest really smart things to do live. I don't really believe in making things beholden to the recorded version, but generally I want the parts present that seem vital to me, so it requires being pretty bossy and ordering people around. Hopefully it'll get more communicative. I think that I'm learning how to do this as I go, since it's been such a thing that I've hidden away in the bedroom. You know, I'm learning more and more how to be a performer. I think that that's actually surprisingly interesting to me. So hopefully I'll have an even better answer for you as we go.
Yeah, maybe we'll try this again another time, get a different answer. And you've mentioned the layering of your songs, and that was part of the reason why it took so long to actually put them together. But when you take complex and layered songs into the live setting, what kind of adjustments do you have to make to translate it into a live performance?
You kind of have to let go. I'll find something rhythmically I did really interesting that just won't read as well live, I think, to a new listener. I think the same thing is true with a lot of the harmonies I end up doing on the record. There's so much closely intervalled harmonies, and not only is pulling that off really difficult, but it also can obscure from what is probably the root of the song. So I found it pretty interesting to just pare things back and just figure out, like, what's the skeleton of the song, which is actually something I think is funny, because I sort of imagine other people writing music from that way, from the skeleton, and then building the musculature or whatever it is, and then getting into the fine details. But I sort of feel like I came at it the opposite direction, and now I'm going in towards the skeleton and just trying to find a way to do that live, because you can actually be more expressive that way too once you simplify things. I think for me it's been a lot of letting go of what I thought was interesting and not having ego about, you know, not trying to be so smart live maybe.
You mentioned the fact that in a way you kind of pick apart your own work, and that's why it took Inner Arbiter so long to become a finished product. Mm-hmm. But now that the album is released, the press and fans have their say on what they think of the album. So what do you think of when you hear other people's interpretations, praise, or even criticism of your work?
You have to try not to think about it, which is a very cliche thing to say. But unfortunately, it is true. It's just true. It's easy to get excited when people are listening and sharing it, because you want that. You want your music to have ears. But there's nothing anyone could say about the record negatively that I might not have already laid awake thinking about when I was doing it. And so I think that in as much as I didn't let myself stop myself, you can't let that happen with anyone else either. And so you really just have to find your own musical compass and sort of trust that, I think. And trust that it keeps changing, and you'll get all sorts of different ears as that happens. So that's also a process that I'm discovering as we do it too.
With respects to your musical career, what do you hope to accomplish, and what do you want to get across with your music?
I just love to find a way to keep doing it seriously with the focus that we're trying to do right now. You know, that's my real goal. I think everything else is intangible. I think setting, you know, goals or limits or requirements was the wrong thing for me to do the last time around. And so rather than looking at it that way, I think my goal has become just to find a way to continue to do it, because I found it sort of unsatisfying that it took a backseat to other things for a few years.
92.3 WTTS, I'm Craig Shank with Sebastian Kruger of Inlets, on tour in support of the debut album Inner Arbiter. Thanks for your time, Sebastian.
Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
92.3 WTTS, on demand.